Duke's interesting because of, like, the whole competitive high school system, and we could talk about this for a long time, but, like, there's, like, the sort of whole, like, cool competitive high school thing.
Same high school as Andrew Cuomo, right here.
And that high school was?
Archbishop Molloy.
Oh, well, there you go. I went to Harrington High School in Pennsylvania.
I went to two high schools, Glen Rock and Ramsey High School, public schools.
I went to public high school, too. So, okay, now that we've settled that,
okay.
Can we talk about the off ballot? I mean, the off top of the ticket races, like controller.
Who are we, though, to talk about?
Who are
this?
We?
I'm Ozzie.
I'm Andrea.
And I guess
You're Brian Lehrer.
I'm Brian Lehrer. No, I'm Bob Henley, and this is Digesting Politics.
So the off-ticket races, anybody interested in them? I quite am at this point.
Well, go ahead. Set the table for us.
So DiNapoli and Wilson seems to me to be an extraordinarily interesting race and fierce, right?
It is fierce. I think that what is of particular interest is the role that Stephen Ratner plays in it, because he's such a – even though, you know, we have to do a little backstory. Stephen Ratner, of course, former New York Times reporter, the auto czar, wrote a book called Overhaul, which you've probably at this point heard about many times and seen him on every possible place that has a TV camera.
I have a story about the his work in Detroit when we're done part.
So he writes a book called, and this happens while, in fact, it's a great strategy if you have a negative problem, because, of course, he was also the subject of the ongoing Security Exchange Commission and Attorney General Andrew Cuomo probe into pay-to-play through the state pension system. That would be the same caper that involved Comptroller Hevesy. He pled guilty. About seven people in total have pled guilty. Hank Morris is still hanging out there as a person who wants to go to trial. And so Ratner has this hanging over his head, but he puts this book out, and in it, he gives a whole chapter to Harry Wilson, calling it Harry Wilson's War, referring to Harry Wilson's role as the lead person to save General Motors and help reorganize it. Now, of course, the Harry Wilson campaign is oh so happy early on to get this book out to everybody and to point out that this will show you what a turnaround specialist Harry Wilson is, and indeed he's a former hedge manager. And so in the mix, early on in the campaign, Tom DiNapoli, the current controller, who was never elected to the post but appointed by the evil legislature, as his opponents call it, was trying to tie in some way Mr. Wilson to Mr. Ratner. Now, ironically, Mr. Ratner is a major Democratic donor. His wife was, co-chair of the Democratic National Campaign Committee, Finance Committee. So they've given millions to the Democratic Party. So this was just kind of the odd situation you have where Tom DiNapoli, the Democrat, is trying to use the relationship Mr. Wilson has, the Republican conservative, to a major Democratic fundraiser and the campaign advisor or finance advisor to Mayor Bloomberg. It's very complicated, but it shows you.
Convoluted.
Yeah, but it's a very small group of people. I mean,
we need to
recruit more people to be involved in public life because it's a very small circle.
So how's the race going?
It's kind of interesting. Is that the least I could say about it? I mean, you have, like, at their debate between DiNapoli and Wilson, the clear lines of argument were, my opponent is from Wall Street and they ruined the economy. And the counter argument was, my opponent is in Albany and they ruined the economy. And they clearly just reminded each other.
Wow.
I know. It's incredibly deep and complex.
That was very efficient, Ozzie. That was where you got it right down. The Don Juan of Wall Street was actually DiNapoli's rhetorical high point, referring to the very handsome and suave Harry Wilson.
The thing that made me the saddest was that the tabloids did not use that line to create an image of the characters in this race the way they did when Harold Ford referred to Kirsten Gillibrand as a parakeet. And the next day, as Chuck Schumer's parakeet, and the next day she was in the New York Post and the Daily News, literally as a parakeet.
Well, let me ask you,
Don Juan of Wall Street? Well, they clearly have their hands. The tabs clearly have their handfuls with the discussion of prowess in the governor's race.
But, oh, that's right.
So, I wanted to ask you, though, do you think that the whole question of Tom DiNapoli, that debate, of course, was fateful in the sense that Wilson beat up on him in a major way, because of the fact at that point in time, Tom DiNapoli was still the focus of the Attorney General's investigation to pay to play. A couple of days later, he was not under investigation because they gave him a clean bill of health, and that's made a big difference. Have we seen some kind of rebound since in DiNapoli?
In his
for those who are hanging
right.
well, on Cuomo's every word.
Well, DiNapoli's people are like elated. They're ecstatic. They've even told Wilson, take down that ad that refers to the investigation, and Wilson has complied. But what you haven't seen is Andrew Cuomo saying anything. about DiNapoli. In fact,
or about anything else that is, you know, substantive and meaningful and deep.
Ouch.
Mean, come on. Right? We're still waiting for, like, the details on many of Cuomo's plans.
It's in the book.
For example,
in the book. Read the book.
Ozzy, did he answer your question about the ARC tunnel yet?
No, not
yet. Yes,
he did.
He answered my question about
it. Oh, he answered Bob's question.
Yes.
About it. There you go.
Yes, right. he has clearly said.
Did he think you were me? Was that how it happened? Did you say?
I am a much larger bear. I don't think you can mistake.
Well, but with respect to DiNapoli, Andrew Cuomo did this amazing thing last night. He went to the Empire State Pride Agenda dinner. He said, I support same-sex marriage. I want to be the governor that signs it. Oh, by the way, our next lieutenant governor is here, Bob Duffy. Eric Schneiderman is here, the attorney general candidate.
Drum roll, please.
And he has to win that office. And I'd like to thank the hosts. He skipped over.
Oh, DiNapoli was there and he didn't say it?
DiNapoli was not there, but he did not give him any type of acknowledgement.
Well, is there a backstory there?
The backstory is DiNapoli was part of this investigation. Cuomo's office was probing DiNapoli.
But they sent him a thing saying he's clear.
Is there a further backstory between DiNapoli and Cuomo?
I
don't know.
I shrugged my shoulders.
Ozzy doesn't know. We've reached the limits of Ozzy's knowledge. Wow, we're in deep.
I think that happened somewhere in second or third grade, possibly.
No, it's impossible. But, so how is the race going? I mean, do we have any polls that are meaningful or voter discussions?
Harry Wilson has outraised DiNapoli.
He's also kind of self-funding partially, too,
right? That's a very, very good point to note. But, I mean, they're both somewhat unknown publicly. Public opinion polls are just like sort of about it. So if you have a challenging candidate with more money than the guy currently in office, you have a year when anyone associated with Albany has a hard time winning over public sympathy. It looks like the slight advantage is for Wilson, but the top of the ticket is Andrew Cuomo, who has a 98.9% chance of defeating Carl Paladino, according to Nate Silver at the New York Times. So you clearly have...
I think we should have a conversation, like, when this is all over, about how those Nate Silver projections are affecting our coverage and our thinking. Because I find them so incredibly influential based on his, you know, his 2008 projections. And we're talking, of course, about the pollster who used to run 538.com, now writes for the Times. But I find myself, and I bet a lot of journalists are using him as a cheat sheet. So anyway, I still have the theory that it's not to the advantage of the Democratic candidate for a controller this year to be of the same party as the leading gubernatorial candidate.
That's a good point.
I just think people want to get a check. I mean, people don't usually vote strategically, but in this case, I believe, given everything that's been going on in Albany, people will say, okay, so, you know, 98.9% chance Cuomo is going to win, therefore I'm going to cross over and vote for a real watchdog.
Now, there's a precedent for that. Didn't Ned Regan serve during the time that Cuomo was in?
Ned Regan served during the time that Cuomo was in. Yes, he did.
The elder, right. So there you have a precedent for people crossing over and feeling that, like, to your point, that you need to have a check on it. No, that's a good observation.
Who did Regan beat to get in there?
Sorry.
Wait a second.
I'm going to remember this before this conversation is through. I actually did. He has a building named after him.
Mr. Chrysler?
It starts with an L.
Levin?
Was there a Levin who was controller? Maybe.
So he beat an incumbent.
There was someone who was an incumbent for a long time. So, we've got to find this out next week and come back and report to people.
Yeah.
And what about the Attorney General's race?
It's bitter. It is really something. I mean, what Schneiderman's been trying to do is draw Donovan in on the social issues. Donovan has a stated position on abortion where he personally opposes it and has tried to nuance it by saying it's settled law and there'll be no circumstance under which I will have to overturn Roe v. Wade. And so he's trying to get that way. But Schneiderman, I think, has been pretty effective in reminding people about all the various ways the Attorney General's views on this is relevant. On his side, Donovan is now trying a strategy of building out and making inroads with Asian New Yorkers. He had a high-profile event with Peter Koo, the city councilman elected in Queens, Republican, making an inroad there. So he's trying to run a And they I think they're evenly matched rhetorically. I mean, what'd you think of that debate? I mean, I didn't think anybody got – it seemed that Donovan wasn't as comfortable in his skin as Schneiderman. I think Schneiderman having that primary helped him in terms of being able to make a direct argument. Are we also supposed to say here that, Mr. Schneiderman's father, Irwin, is on the board of WNYC? Now we've disclosed it.
And I think it's kind of amazing that almost every statement that comes out of the Donovan campaign notes Schneiderman's dad is a contributor to the campaign and a wealthy lawyer with a lot of money. That's got to be a
Spitzer resonance for insiders, right? Because Spitzer's first campaign for attorney general was really bankrolled by his father, and he had some, you know, kind of borderline financial dealings right before the first election. I don't know if you remember this.
The New York Times was
very upset about it. He got a loan. He didn't quite disclose it in the way that was kosher. To me, that is very kind of inside baseball.
The specifics might be a problem, but Donovan is a self-made individual in the sense that his whole ethos is working-class ethos coming from Staten Island. And one of the things that Schneiderman is trying to do is trying to undermine Donovan's principal resume item is that he has improved crime-fighting in Staten Island, that he has improved things like he's brought multilingual capacity to the office. He has a witness protection program. So Schneiderman's been looking at the uptick in crime and trying to tie that back to Donovan's representation that somehow he's improved the situation in Staten Island.
Donovan's got to benefit from these competitive congressional races, right? I mean,
that's
23rd, the 15th,
and
Staten Island, they're all
and
places
even in the 19th.
That are going to bring out Republicans.
Right, and he does have the conservative nod. And
the
19th,
that's the Arcuri
seat?
That's
Hudson Valley.
That's
Nan Hayworth versus John Hall. And you're right.
There's the Arcuri one, too, the old former Gillibrand seat.
Right. So there's going to be the committed base, the energy, and we're seeing this in national data, and I think it's holding out regionally. The Obama base is just not energized and, in fact, is debilitated. And one of the things might be some of the messages the president's having to carry. Consider the whole thing about don't ask, don't tell. Here the courts hand them an opportunity for a Truman moment to really, you know, open up the military, like he said he wanted to do, to gay, so people can serve openly and be gay, and yet he still says it has to be done
in an orderly way, which to me is like, who is happy with that?
Right,
like,
who's
the base for orderly?
Who
are the pro-orderly people?
I got one better. We have a situation where I never thought I'd live long enough to see the major banks that were in such a rush, in such a greedy rush to throw people out of their homes, that they didn't do proper paperwork foreclosures. So now they've had a moratorium. The incredible thing has happened.
David Axelrod's against it.
Right, and he says, well, maybe the White House is coming out with a line like, well, let's keep moving with the foreclosures where the paperwork is good. I'm Snidely Whiplash, and we didn't pay the rent, so throw you out. I mean, give me a break. How is that a message to get the base energized?
Let me say something about Stephen Ratner and Michigan.
Okay,
I was in Michigan earlier this week and doing some reports on a couple of things, including a swing congressional district.
You got that
in
Transportation Nation,
Transportation
right?
Transportation Nation. On. So one of the things that I was talking to people about was the GM bailout, right? Because the GM bailout it's probably one of the best Obama administration success stories. You know, General Motors didn't go under. The company restructured itself. It's paid most of the money back. People are sort of like, okay, well, if you compare that to TARP, I mean, General Motors bailout was structured in a way where the taxpayers got a much better deal than in TARP, where the argument is essentially they got a blank check. So I was in Michigan, right? Okay, so where is that going to be the most popular? Michigan. And, you know, I am raising this because, of course, the car czar, Stephen Ratner, was the person whose very convoluted story we began. And here he is again, Stephen Ratner. So he was the car czar. He structured this thing. People say it worked out well, who sort of are industry analysts. In Michigan, what was so fascinating to me is there were people who said, you know, yes, it saved, you know, I've got five people in my family working for General Motors, and this saved their jobs. But there were also a lot of people who had a sort of very populist, from-the-left critique of it, saying, you know, big banks, big car companies, they should not be bailed out. They should have, you know, given us all a car and you know, given us the money to buy a car. That would have been a much fairer way to do it. So what's fascinating to me is that even in a, you know, one of the areas where Obama can have a sort of less muddied claim to success than some of his other areas, and even among his base, there is deep skepticism. And that cannot be a happy thing for Democrats.
And at points, I look at this. I mean, I brought this piece of paper, and I thought it might be relevant. This is the polling track for the Mission gubernatorial race. Rick Schneider, Republican, leads Virge Bonario by 18.7%.
This was a state that John McCain gave up in. McCain gave up
That's
in Michigan.
That's incredible.
No, John McCain
this is
did
to your
not.
Point.
Right, he did not compete in Michigan in 2008 because they, you know, I think they lost. I think, and I've got to fact check this, but I believe Obama won by something like 13 points. They've had a Democratic governor for a long, long
Pretty
time.
Pretty dynamic, Granholm,
in Michigan.
Right?
I mean, the only thing that I will say about the Michigan race is that some of the Democratic counter themes are beginning to take hold. You know, I did hear people say the Republicans want to privatize Social Security. The Republicans want to send our jobs to China. So, you know, the Democrats have been, you know, belatedly, some argue, hitting back at, you know, what they say is a Republican assault. And some of these themes are beginning to seep in. So that my prediction is that we'll probably see something of a tightening in some of these areas like Michigan.
But what can Democrats do if a car restructuring, bailout, whatever you want to call it, it's successful objectively, but not popular in Detroit, Michigan, or like Michigan? Like, what can Democrats do?
There's the rub.